This is CliffCentral.com.
Hey, Palesa, tell us what's this all about? Let's get Palesa on the microphone over there. Good morning, Palesa Mabui. How are you?
Okay, the mic. Yeah. I am good.
All right, you chose that song. What is it?
I love it. It's new by Sun L, featuring, what's his name? Mlindo.
Yes.
He's a new artist who was discovered on Twitter by DJ Maphorisa.
And it's called Bamtatile.
Yes.
Okay, very nice. Nice.
Love it.
All right, love it too. Happy. All right, there we go. That's Palesa. All right, what's happening, everybody? Let's get into this. I still can't believe Dudu Mieni was having dinner the night before she sent that letter to Parliament to say how sick she was.
With some unknown gentleman.
Well, she doesn't. There's no point in her being with the president anymore.
Yeah,
ex-president.
Supposedly at a hotel. And I love how this reporter was stating the saying. And it appears she was sipping something out of a wine glass. Well, girl, it's wine. Why are you making it sound more?
Well, because you
delicious?
See, they can't say that she was drinking because maybe her medication that she says she's on doesn't agree with drink. And then people would say, well, you're not really that sick.
Yeah,
but then I think we all know that she's not really that sick.
Of course not. Why is she at a hotel? If you're sick, you stay at home.
She was spotted at a 4-star Garden Court hotel in Hatfield in Pretoria.
You only go to inner city hotels for a hookup. If you live in the city, and you go to a Garden Court.
Especially a Garden Court.
There we go.
Yes. Mapuna.
Why else?
Maybe it was prescribed by her doctor.
Mapun.
Oh.
Go get yourself some D. It'll fix you right up.
Right.
10:30 p.m. Jeez.
All right. So sure. I'm so disappointed in her. I always thought Dudu was such an honest woman. You know, she did so much for SAA and ESCOM and the Jacob Zuma Foundation. Not that there was any conflict of interest there. So what a great woman. We're lucky to have had Dudu Mieni at her prime. One day, you'll all look back, you people, and you'll all say, those are the good old days of Dudu Mieni. Ha ha! Ha ha! Fooled you! That's bullshit. That's what that is. All right, Mabs, what do you got for us?
Unfortunately, I'm going to begin with a story that doesn't highlight humanity in the best possible light. Do you remember the story about a Soweto primary school where a security guard was arrested and accused of sexually assaulting 87 pupils at that school?
Jesus.
All right.
I mean, it was one of the bigger controversies when the news broke. Unfortunately, yesterday it was revealed that the police investigating officer who was assigned to the case was arrested yesterday for similar crimes at the same school.
Ugh.
This was according to the Gauteng Education Department. They said that the SAPS forensic investigator was alleged to have abused two pupils at the school. The incident occurred on the 12th of March when the officer visited the school to prepare the young victims for court. And it's alleged that the investigator sexually molested two grade 3 pupils aged 7 and 8 years old, respectively. The children have now become victims of sexual assault twice by different people. The matter has been escalated to family and child services, where the pupils and their parents are in the process of being interviewed. But I mean, how's that for just a raw deal being handed to you? You get assaulted.
What a horrible school.
You get sexually assaulted by the security guard at your school. Jeez. And then the investigating officer who's assigned to the case comes in and does the exact same thing. You're 7 years old.
Mm-mm. It's too horrible for words. It really, this is the kind of thing that proves to me that humans, we've got, like you often say, Mubs, we need an asteroid. And I mean, I'm not saying all of us are as sick and twisted as these people, the security guard and this investigating officer. But Jesus, you have to be depraved. To do this to a child. I don't know what to say about it.
Well, there really is no point or need to compare the two. But I mean, as this person who's brought in because you've been alerted of this dire, sick and twisted situation, and you still go in and you take even more advantage of those kids. Yeah.
These predatory, these disturbed, psychologically, sociopathically, pathological people. And they're among us. They walk among us. They pretend their lives are normal. They pretend they've got normal wants and desires. I mean, to be so sick in the head.
Yeah, I mean, for some people, they are friends. They are our family members, these predators.
Jeez, makes me sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, it's...
What a story.
What do you say? What do you say?
There's nothing to say. It's
just the trauma that these kids have had to deal with at such a young age. Mm. And now they have this big hurdle that they're going to have to get over to try and get back to being normal or to grow up to being normal adults.
Or just not perpetuate that cycle by doing the same when they get to adulthood.
There is that as well, Ben. Our Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, Siyabonga Gcwele, he says that the cost of our data prices in South Africa are not declining and are unlikely to decline anytime soon because, according to him, the industry is highly concentrated and there isn't enough competition. No. So these network providers are going to keep, you know, their hands right by our genitals where they've currently got them, and they're going to continue squeezing. You'll remember that hashtag Data Must Fall campaign,
yeah,
right?
We were part of that at the beginning. I see Simpiwe Dana suddenly climbed on, but someone woke her up from her stupor 2 days ago, and she was like, data's too expensive all of a sudden.
So the campaign gained momentum on social media. It made its way into Parliament where a presentation was given. But, Gcwele says that... Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, is not coming down at a rate required by the citizens of the region. And interestingly enough, South Africa is moving slower than any other African country.
Well, thanks, douchebag. Why don't you do something about it?
He says one of the main reasons we still have high costs is because the industry remains highly concentrated. He says we are unlikely to see aggressive competition if we don't open up the sector to more and new entrants,
Do it. You're the Minister of Telecommunications. Why are you telling us this?
He says we have a strange market where it costs the poor more to access data than it costs the rich.
Don't you love, like, he gets up there as a politician. He's like, I'm powerless. Well, then why are you in politics? Get out. Either do something. Don't go and tell us how. We know. We're the ones who are paying. You don't pay your own cell phone bill. You get it paid by the taxpayer. Pretend you understand our problems. Why do you think it's taking so long for us to get these data prices down? Because you're sitting on your hands, Siyabonga Gcwele, when you haven't got your wife in jail for drug smuggling.
He also welcomed the progress that's being made by ICASA on effective competition in the broadband market, as well as
progress?
As well as the Competition Commission's market inquiry into the data services. ICASA are scheduled to release their findings by June this year, and they're going to indicate a list of markets that should be regulated and priority markets to be subjected to market reviews.
Now, hang on. Regulation is the opposite of opening it up to competition, dude. You need to sit down and someone needs to explain basic economics to you. Either you open it up to competition and you invite everybody in the world to come and participate and make some money and at the same time drop the rates for ordinary South Africans, or you regulate the existing environment. You can't have both. They don't go together. And by the way, don't congratulate ICASA if you don't mind. Those guys are doing nothing. ICASA are the same people who sat under Faith Mutambi doing zero. The same people who were meant to have done something about this data situation 2 years ago, we presented to Parliament. Nothing happened. Don't give me that they need congratulations. They need to kick up the rear end. That's what they need. ICASA. What has ICASA ever done for you, Mabale?
I can't immediately think of anything.
Because there's nothing.
But
will it eventually come to you?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe they might have, and I'm just not aware of it. I don't know.
Anything for you, Sia?
Nothing that jumps out just yet.
Ben?
I can see their logo in my head, but I don't know where...
It's on all electronic equipment. So basically on your phone, whatever phone you've got, it's got a little sticker on it, yeah?
So they manufacture stickers then?
They manufacture, they make stickers. They say, oh, this is okay, we approve this.
Okay.
That's what they do. I don't know who does that, but I mean, they're not doing it one at a time either. It's just crazy. All right. There must be something that we can do about this. I don't know. I mean, it just seems so unfair that apparently the number is that if you're on Vodacom or on MTN and you're out of bundle, like you run out of bundle and you spend something like 2,900 times what anyone anywhere else would be paying.
Yeah, look, our network providers in this country are in the prime position and they know it.
Ugh. God.
They're really milking us, eh? They really are.
And then a quote from the now late Stephen Hawking, who died last night. He said, however bad life may seem, there is always something you can do and succeed at. While there's life, there is hope. Stephen Hawking.
Okay. True or false? No one is 100% straight.
You ask any gay person that, they're going to say, of course.
Yeah, see, this is this. You can argue this all day, depending on which side of the Chardonnay glass you're on.
And then you ask, and then you ask any straight person, they go, oh, gay people just haven't tried it, but they might like it if they went the straight way.
But dare you say that to them? And be like, what? How dare you?
Oh, yeah.
This is who I am.
So angry. People get very upset. Well, what's the answer?
Well, according to a new study, Ben, it's not which side of the Chardonnay glass you're on, but it's more where on the sexuality spectrum you lie. Mm. But this study says all of us get aroused by men and women.
Huh.
Strictly heterosexual people don't exist, according to a psychologist who claims more and more men are better defined as mostly straight, but not 100% straight.
Yeah, but then you got to look at the definition of heterosexuality. Like, we are drawn to things that we want in life. So, I want a nice car. I want, I don't know, that pizza. I want a six-pack like that guy. It doesn't mean I'm going to fuck a lasagna or that guy.
No, they're not saying that you're going to
It's just that I'm drawn to things that I want.
No. They're not saying that you are going to fuck the lasagna or the pizza, but what they're saying is that you do get aroused.
Yeah, that's exactly my point, is that but arousal, there's arousal as in getting your attention, and then there's arousal in like the see her after 11 o'clock in Bryanston kind of thing.
See her after 11.
Okay. So while most societies promote heterosexuality as the norm, this leading researcher at Cornell University has found that most of us get aroused by both genders. The paper brings into question strict definitions of sexuality. The lead author is Rich Seven Williams. He's a psychologist specializing in gender studies.
Why is it always that they're always hyphenating people, these ones, huh? This study by -.
Just shows how fancy you are.
And Seven Williams says that we still struggle with the concept of bisexuality, particularly when it comes to heterosexual men. In his new book, Mostly Straight, he finds that younger generations are increasingly open to looser boundaries. He interviewed 40 men who insist they are straight, but they have dabbled in liaisons with other men.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It builds on his study, which was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, where he examined volunteers who identified as either male or female. Basically, they showed them some porn, right? Took a bunch of men, a bunch of women. They showed them porn involving men, and then also porn involving women. And then they measured how their eyes dilated, because apparently
this is absolute horseshit.
That is apparently.
I tell you what, if I see some guy taking up the chuff, my eyes will dilate, because I do not see that on a day-to-day basis.
So they
it's something that I see and go, oh look, just a bit of more anal sex.
They measured pupil dilation because they say that that is one of the dead giveaways of us being aroused.
You show me a 12-car pileup on the highway, and I'll show you dilated pupils.
Women's eyes dilated. Women's eyes dilated watching men with women and watching women with women. The men's eyes dilated watching two women, of course, and also watching men masturbate.
I see an incredible connection sale on like iPads, and my eyes will dilate too. It's called arousal to things we want. Doesn't mean this hyphen guy. Jeepers, get back to doing something decent with whatever qualifications you've got.
You are getting very defensive, Ben.
Not at all.
Listen to my buddy playing Freud here.
I will call a bullshit spade when I see one, though.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about this. And this is a common question where, you know, straight men typically will never admit to finding another man attractive, even though he's standing right there in front of you and he is obviously attractive.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with finding him attractive?
No, but this is okay. This like saying this he, is a very
that,
good argument.
That is an attractive yes. man. But say
that's,
it.
But that's where
it
ends. It's like I've said many times in this show that David Beckham's an attractive man.
Yeah.
I do not want coitus with David Beckham.
No,
though.
You don't.
What is the?
But a lot of you coitus. Find it difficult to even admit okay. that somebody coitus. Is attractive yes. because you think that it immediately means that the rest of us are going to think, "Ooh, you want Ooh. Some of
yeah,
that."
Yeah, but this is a big yeah. thing for men. For straight men, they don't. Yes. The last thing you want as a straight guy is to have other guys, not women. Other guys think you're gay. Because for men, if you're a straight man and other straight guys think you're gay, you are finished.
No, you're not, actually.
Yes. No. I'm telling you yeah. how it works for men. Like for straight men, they start treating you differently and it becomes like the funniest thing in the world to them. Yeah. It's a big thing. This is why guys...
Up to the age of 25. Why do you think, maybe you need more mature friends.
No. Hang on. This is why... No, I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about when you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
When you're exploring the world, you're getting to know, you know, women and sexuality and all the rest of it. This is why guys catcall when they walk through a shopping mall and they see a beautiful... Yo, that chick's hot. They say to their friends, I'd fuck her. I mean, who does that? That's ridiculous. But men do it because they want to show the other men they're not gay. Telling you.
This macho.
Yeah. It's a whole thing.
Pump my chest up.
Yeah, it's a, thing. Hey, Oaks, check that chick's legs. Well, why would you do... So look at her. If she turns you on and you think she's hot, then look at her. Why you have to tell the other guys that you're looking at her is because you want them to know you're an alpha male, you're a hot-blooded, straight guy. You know what I mean? That's what guys do.
Hmm. Yeah, I get what you
I
mean.
I think more than anything, it just exposes you for being an idiot. You are trying so hard to get approval from the rest of us.
This is what I'm saying, yeah. is that those people are idiots. So Ben is saying he's not attracted to men sexually. He thinks this survey is bullshit. He can acknowledge an attractive man, but it doesn't turn him on.
Yeah, I mean...
Sia, on the other hand, sees an attractive man. It turns him on.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why
Mabali thinks about what she could do to him, and if it's exciting enough, it turns her on.
Yeah, sure.
What it comes down to, Gareth, you're touching on it. It's just people have these stupid insecurities towards things.
Right.
It's like being gay is not a crime, and it's not even socially awkward. I mean, Sia and I have nothing in common. Sia's gay, I'm straight, but still, we can get along as human beings. Neither one of us is going to be toxic to each other.
Well, it's also, there's this stupid idea that a lot of straight and gay people have that because they're straight or gay, that everyone is attracted to them. You know, everyone of the gender they're interested in.
Yeah, I mean, that's just...
I think that's mostly straight men, though. Well.
Yeah, but you also get the gay guys who are like, oh, every man is straight until...
Yeah.
You know, and then they'll try and convert you.
They call them uncooked spaghetti.
Sure. Well, you know,
all
guys,
uncooked spaghetti straight up until it gets into some hot water. Ooh, does that not flip and flop?
Well, look, I mean, also like John T said it a few times, that you know, everyone's straight until it feels good.
Hey now.
That's an interesting
Which
point of
in
view.
In itself is an interesting point of view.
Yeah. Okay, well, this study is saying that we are all on the spectrum, but the study is basically saying that, look, we all get aroused by men and women, all of us.
So essentially what the study is saying is that, because this is another thing about humans, we love to box each other into these things.
Yes.
Like, it's like you're this or you're that. We're just humans. And you know what? Some people might have a gay month. Maybe April.
Gay month.
Maybe in April, you know, change your seasons and you want a bit of gay.
Sure. Turn it up a little bit.
Go ahead.
Try something
just
different.
Just be comfortable with who you are from an early age, and then you'll stop wasting time by being, oh, I've got to act all masculine right now.
Right.
I'm going to Ellis Park
thing.
To watch rugby.
Right, and do your thing.
And then you come out as a cliche, and then no one likes you. So even if you do like guys, guys won't like you. And if you do like girls, they'll go, oh, he's weird.
Yeah.
Just be you. That's our rule.
Yeah.
Everybody, here's your bit of wisdom for the morning. Just be you. Do whatever you want.
Not so hard.
Live your life.
Whoever you want.
Yeah. Whoever.
And do whoever you want. Yeah. All right. Here are a couple of questions and comments on the WhatsApp and the WeChat and the Twitter and the rest. Gareth, I'm listening to the Burning Platform from last week, and I'm appalled that you're insinuating that African kings are irrelevant in 2018, yet you're always talking about Queen Elizabeth on your show. Olani. I think she's irrelevant as well, Olani. I think it's ridiculous that there's some person who has a crown whose children inherit the crown and they end up lording it over the rest of it. It's crazy.
We often make fun of her and that family.
Yeah, I think you're being super sensitive. So, fuck off. Well, I mean. Gareth,
kindly.
Did you get ICASA approval for your unwired? Yes, we did have to get them.
Oh,
if not, careful how much cuck you give them. You need approval, Carl. No, we did. I didn't do that, though. I had nothing to do with that, thank goodness. What the hell is wrong with guys who rape and molest little girls? There should be laws which allow government to castrate those people.
So true. We've spoken about this many times before. It's spot on.
That's from Vince. And then someone wants to know, Balesa, Haibo, is Balesa going through a breakup? That song that she suggested.
Oh.
Going through a breakup, are you, Balesa? Do you want to deal with this?
Because the song directly translated means they have taken her.
Mm-hmm. You want to deal with this? No.
She's answering. She's answering calls.
Yeah, she's not interested
she's
in
being prioritizing.
Someone says they're busy with the Jordan Peterson book on Audible. Really, really good stuff. And I can't wait to hear you on cliffcentral.com. They're actually tweeting Jordan Peterson there as well. Here's something interesting. Someone says here, I have a cold. My voice is weird today. So out of the blue, my son says, Mommy, if I ever want to transform into a woman, I'd just move to France and then I wouldn't have to change my name. Clearly, I sound like a man today.
Oh.
Huh. Okay, because his name is James. So, I don't know how... You wouldn't have to change your name? James? Jamie? What would you... I don't know how that works. And by the way, the nun's final words, according to Carl in Josie, was... her final words actually were, fuck you, Katy Perry.
Oh, okay.
Not just stop, Katy Perry.
Well, you know, you've got to get it out there before it's all over.
What a thing to make your final two words, Katy Perry. Shame, she must feel really awful about that in the afterlife. What else is going on?
Let's talk a little bit about Black Mirror. I mean, this is one of Ben's favorite shows. Sure. And he often talks about how the show taps into aspects of our current reality. And then people always get nervous about the prospect of certain things that are depicted in this show actually coming true. And it looks like one aspect of the show is being worked on by the Chinese government.
Which one?
So there is one of the episodes on the show is called Nosedive. And basically, in the episode, it depicts a social media-obsessed society, right? People are rated out of 5 after every single interaction that they have with each other.
Yep, hectic episode.
And then these ratings dictate where you can live, who you can be friends with, how you get to travel. So it's a rating system. And now, the Chinese government is building a social credit rating that is going to test the trustworthiness of its citizens. They want to implement the system fully by 2020. This is how it's going to work. According to the Telegraph, people will be given a score. The lowest is going to be 350 and the highest is 950. Their number will go up and down when they do good deeds, like if you donate blood, if you do charity work, if you recycle, or weirdly, if you send positive messages about the country on social media, they will give you bonus points.
Of course, yeah, that's a good one.
However, the citizens, if they do something bad, then that's when you like undergo their demerit system and you start being scored down.
But it's kind of smart, though. Like, if you molest a child, you're unable to buy a house or you can't shop at a certain supermarket. Can you imagine that? Like, you want to go walk into your local supermarket and this bell goes off. No, pedophile, out.
Out, get out. You're not allowed here. You're not
How
one
cool
of us.
Would that be?
Oh, but who wants to work pedophile at the supermarket out devoted to pedophiles?
Well, Sia, did you not hear me? The pedophile does not get to go into the supermarket.
But I'm saying, So pedophiles will not be allowed to shop or buy groceries anywhere?
No, they will not.
They've got to pay other people to do it for them. And their lives become really marginalized and horrible.
Yeah. So basically, in the Black Mirror episode, Sia, if you have a particular rating, for example, you are allowed to live in specific areas. So if you scored a 3, you wouldn't be allowed to live in a Sandton because, sorry, we don't want this your sounds, ilk.
This sounds like discrimination of the worst kind.
So, it's great. We need to start discriminating more on a positive aspect level here.
Oh, you mean we need to get back to discriminating because that's what people have been doing their entire lives.
That's all we do in this world. We do it badly.
We bring back apartheid, Ben.
At least we do it in a progressive way now.
Oh, progressive discrimination.
Yeah, because, this doesn't see race or socioeconomic backgrounds. This is about you giving back to society and having a purposeful role in it.
Well, according to the Chinese government, they're saying it's about your trustworthiness.
True.
So
you imagine you go to a job interview and you've got education, all that kind of stuff, but you're kind of a 350.
Mm.
And they're like, well, we're not hiring you. You can't be left in a room with a child or a dog or someone else's sandwich, so we can't hire you.
Yeah, sorry. Take it elsewhere.
What if people ganged up and gave you a bad rating just because, I don't know, you wore a bad shirt one day? What if everybody in the office went onto your profile and rated you badly because they were spiteful?
I don't think bad shirts come into it, Gareth.
Or, well, in this specific case.
We're talking about actual things here, like if you steal a car.
Yeah, but you know how dumb people are. They're gonna rate you badly. If you ask the average person to give a rating of another average person, immediately power play comes into this. You have someone, am I above them or below them?
Yeah,
if
sure.
I'm below them, am I resentful? Do I vote them down? If I'm above them, do I feel sorry for them? Do I vote them up? You know what I mean?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously it's done by humans, so it will fail. But I mean, if you go back to the point of like, if you recycle, okay, the whole thing about positive messages about the government, that's very Chinese. Mm-mm. But like, if you recycle, do you give blood? Are you up to date on your taxes?
Shit, I'm behind on at least 2 of those, and it's not my taxes.
Well, you see, you're already down to 400.
So if I don't recycle, Ben's going to downgrade me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you don't sing the
national
anthem.
And I don't donate blood, so I'm in trouble.
Look, I don't donate blood either because I can't. I fall over and die. But there's other areas, Gareth. You don't have to be a 10 out of 10 person, but the point is that you're at least focusing on doing more for society.
Yeah, but you know, the minute you create these kinds of frameworks, it's going to be some idiot who lives 3 houses down from you who's going to, I'm going to donate blood every week so I can get a 10 out of 10.
Well, that's great. Then he'll die because he's being overzealous, and then that's fine.
But what about the argument that we're always having on this show, Ben, that we really need to move away from having governments have the biggest amount of control?
Because who's going to administer this system?
The Chinese government here are the one implementing this system.
This can be an automated app service. It's fine.
Yeah, then Zuckerberg's going to be in charge of it. That's all we need.
No, Zuckerberg got minus points because he's not human.
Okay. All right, we got someone on the line. I just want to go to this quickly. Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen, and Mabale.
Yes.
I think Jonty's got it spot on. I used to live in Bloom, and I had a friend that was married, and he got invited to a dinner of another 2 friends of ours, two gay guys. He went in as a married man with a woman, and he came out the next day as being converted.
Hmm.
So Jonty's got it pretty spot on, if you like it, I suppose.
What did they do to him? What did they do to him at that dinner?
Well, I can only guess, but not long after that, the Oak got divorced, and that's the way he went. Jonty's got it pretty spot on. It reminds me of a little story about this youngster that had sex for the first time and walked back home and got home, and his dad asked him, you know, what's up? He said, well, I had sex for the first time. And his dad sat him down, cracked open a beer, and said, well, have you got any questions for me? And then the youngster says, yeah, he just wants to know how long his arse is still going to hurt. Anyway. Ben, and then I just want to find out, did you guys cover the story about what happened in Port Elizabeth with the rugby and this whole Sasco scenario?
No, we didn't.
Tell us.
Yes, guys, you missed it. I remember a couple of, it was last year when there was that big fight at Free State, in the Free State, with regards to the student, it was a student, I think the Shimlers played, and it was a fight and a whatnot going on, and the game, I don't know if the game got cancelled.
Oh, there was that pitch invasion.
Oh, there was that pitch invasion around the whole.
Yeah, we had that in PE on Monday evening, but it was hectic. There was girls getting hit, there was guys getting hit, the rugby players got hit. It was actually a little funny because the guy that started it all said, well, you know, this is not the free state. So yeah, you'll get a hiding, and then all ruckus broke out. The game was stopped.
Yeah, well, what actually started it? I mean, was it political, or was it people who don't like the Shimlers? I mean, what was it?
No, it was a whole thing about quota. Said that the student body council said that there was not enough black players apparently in the game, and hence them stopping the game and invading the pitch. And then it turned out into a mood of a fight. But it was disgusting. And I just thought, it was all over the media, social media anyway. I thought you guys had seen that.
No, I've clearly been too engrossed in the cricket. No, I mean, I'm looking at it now. This is terrible.
No, it was horrible. Anyway, guys, have a good one.
You should get out of PE if you can.
Sure. Move to Australia.
Yeah. Well, anywhere. Anywhere, really.
Cheers, guys.
All right, dude. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Wow, there we go. Interesting stuff, huh? Look at what's going down. It's all happening. Anything else you want to throw in?
Well, just that the Church of Scientology are now headed to television.
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, come on, Gareth. All other religions get to have their prime time. So
yeah,
just give the Scientologists, give Tom Cruise and his crew the same opportunity.
They're just so weird, these Scientologists. I know that people will say, oh, but so is Christianity, and so is Islam, and so is Judaism. But this thing is weird. Because it was made up, the whole religion was invented by a science fiction writer called L. Ron Hubbard. Now, the other religions, you could say, well, you know, 5,000 years ago, we needed to control people. So bunch of smart people got together and said, let's concoct this idea of this man in the sky who's going to watch you so that people will behave, even when they're not being watched. Whatever. Maybe you believe in it, literally, that there were burning bushes and there were arcs and there were snakes that could talk, and that's fine. It comes out of the mists of time. So no one can prove you wrong or prove you right. But we absolutely 100% know that L. Ron Hubbard was a big fraudster.
Sure.
Not all of us believe that, Gareth.
You mean the Scientologists,
yes,
don't the rest of us?
The okay, Scientologists
well,
would argue.
Well, then believe him, because he wrote to his friend, and he said, if you really want to make some serious money, start a religion. Now, if that isn't proof positive that this guy was a cynical fraudster, I don't know what is. You wake up in the morning and you're going to rip people off. You're going to tell them lies about Lord Xenu and people's souls in volcanoes and engrams and all this shit. You make it up. He's made it up. It's like fucking Lord of the Rings, except he made it sound like it was a real thing. And some idiots, gullible, cretinous people said, yeah, this sounds like a good enough reason to exist. Let's go with this. They hook you up to a machine which tests nothing.
How dare you say this?
It tests zero. They hook you up to this fucking machine. And then they plug you into it, and you have to purge your bad feelings and all kinds of. I mean, it's crazy. It's wacky psychology without the psychology.
Sure,
unbelievable. Now you tell me, people, that's good for people?
No, I didn't say it's good for people, but I'm saying in a world where people get stepped on, where they get fed petrol, where they're made to eat grass and snakes,
it's the same.
Scientology should be allowed the same.
Yep.
All right.
Go ahead.
You win. Good point. You see, you won by argument.
So the organization are going to be premiering Scientology TV. Uh-huh. It's going to be available via streaming services, you know, your Apple TV, your Roku, your Fire TV. Scientology Media Productions is behind the network. They actually launched back in May last year.
Yeah.
And according to promos, some of their programs will include Inside Scientology and Meet a Scientologist. I would actually love to watch an episode of this just to see the madness.
Have you looked up the guy who's in charge of the Church of Scientology, this Muscovy Miscavige dude?
Let's look him up.
Jesus. You know, read stories about him. That is a whack job if ever there was. He's in charge of the whole thing. He makes the Pope look sane. And young. It's something else. All right, well, good luck to you, Scientologists. You're allowed to believe whatever you want to believe. Just don't expect me to respect it. That's all. Ludicrous. All righty. So I got this email from a dude who wants to pop in and discuss fathers and access that they should have to their children. He hasn't seen his son for a while. It's been like 4 months. And he's just like at his wit's end. And like anybody, you could imagine if you were a mom or a dad and you don't get to see your kid, it must be very, very difficult, right?
Yeah.
He says the cops came into his house. You can hear the story straight away out of him. You don't have to hear it from me. But obviously he's decided now enough is enough, and he wants to talk about this just from the point of view of fathers and their rights to see their own kids. So how are you, man?
I'm well, Gareth.
I'm not sure whether to go with anonymous here or whether we should tell people who you are, but it's up to you.
I really don't mind, Gareth.
All right. Well,
pretty happy to let it out there.
Let's get into this slowly, though. Explain to us what happened to you and how you ended up in this situation, because I got an email from you and I thought, this sounds like an interesting story. I couldn't immediately remember you said that your wife had been here on the channel with us.
Yep.
That we'd met at some point. She's quite well known in South Africa, and you said that the two of you were happy for a long time. All of a sudden, things started to go wrong. And then you were woken up one Saturday morning with guns to your face.
It sounds outrageous, but it's the more time I spend in a family court and the more men that I speak to, the more I realize that this is actually quite a common occurrence. Using protection orders against men as a leveraging tool in terms of divorce proceedings.
Oh, yeah?
I can't really speak for all men, but again, I've met a lot of men who have gone through this process. So on a Saturday morning, my wife was out with the infant son.
Yeah.
Having a sleep, as all new parents would know, especially with a colic child. I mean, you try and catch a nap when you can. And literally was woken up by two members of SAPS with automatic weapons in my bedroom.
Jesus. That's not a great good morning.
No, certainly not. It's the last thing you expect on a Saturday morning. Obviously, being quite shocked, I sort of asked them what they were there for. I don't really know how to respond to something like that coming out of a sleeper. And they were there to serve me with an interim protection order, in a sense that I was a threat to my child's life and my wife's life, basically, as cited in the interim protection order.
Did you have any warning that this was going to happen? I mean, had you two been on the rocks for some time before this?
Again, I think that any parent will testify to the fact that when you have an infant son or an infant child,
puts a strain on the relationship.
Who's colic, you puts a strain on a relationship. Parents aren't sleeping as much as what they should. She started talking to me about a divorce, I guess, probably about a month before the cops arrived. Admittedly, I fought the concept of a divorce. I mean, although we had been together for 8 years, we'd only literally been together married for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was fighting it as much as possible, and I probably didn't realize how serious she actually sort of was about it. Again, I was a stay-at-home father, and I guess like most mothers, I guess I'm generalizing that most mothers would attest to the fact that when you are sort of involved in your child's life to that extent, you're not really on the level. You know, you're quite exhausted, and you're putting all your energies into your son, I guess.
So in other words, the two of you were brittle, but you had no warning that there was going to suddenly be a situation where you would be served with a protection order.
No, most certainly not. I mean,
was there any kind of indirect threats of violence from you to her or from her to you or any of that stuff?
Well, I mean, again, I mean, every relationship sort of has its ups and downs. I mean, all I can attest to is from my side that obviously I will state for the record, you know, completely, but that there was absolutely no threats of violence from my side. There was no case of physical abuse in any which way or form. I mean, just for the record, I mean, the interim protection order that I was served, and please don't quote me, I'm not a lawyer, but according to the Domestic Violence Act in South Africa, there are 10 forms of domestic violence. I think in the affidavit I fit 8 of the 10 forms of domestic violence.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. Verbal, emotional abuse, alienation from family, physical abuse. I can't remember all of them.
So this is what the protection order said that you were doing or were capable of doing?
Well, this was intimated. So how a protection order works is you literally go to the domestic violence court, you fill out an application, and on that application you attach an affidavit.
It's really your word against anyone else.
It really is your word. But what is incredible to me is the fact that a magistrate can literally ruin a man's life on the word of somebody without any factual basis to it in an affidavit. There's no specific claim. There's no specific date. There's no evidence attached to the affidavit whatsoever.
So according to this protection order, because now you're obviously quite confused, because it comes out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And again, just like the protection order has only your side, her side on it.
Sure.
This is now your side of the story.
Sure.
So I'm going to treat it with as much circumspection would the protection order. But this protection order arrives. Now, you're not allowed to contact her to find out, hey, listen, what the hell's going on here?
Exactly.
You're not allowed to make any contact at all.
Basically.
And you don't know where she is. You don't know what the plan is.
Nothing.
You don't, how do you carry on? I mean, what are your parameters for a life from there on?
Well, I think the thing that broke me on the protection order was the fact that the protection order didn't cover the fact that I should not be allowed access to my son. So the magistrate did not disallow me access to my son, although it was claimed that I was a threat to his life. I think the difficult thing, speaking as a father, is because of the parameters of the interim protection order and the fact that you cannot make contact with her, by default, then you cannot make contact with your son. So literally, you've got to wait for a legal process to take place, which is a 2-month waiting period before you get a court date, in which time you have no idea where your infant son is. You have got no idea to his well-being.
Have you seen your son for the last 4 months?
No. No.
Do you have any idea of when you might be able to see your son?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, Gareth, I've got no idea. I mean, obviously, we went to court on the 27th of Feb to contest the actual interim protection order. So what happens is you go and contest the interim protection order. If the magistrate sees relevance in her case in this scenario, the magistrate would order you then with the final protection order. Fortunately for myself, the magistrate saw no evidence or no validity in the claims within the affidavit to have warranted a final protection order. And basically the interim order was thrown out of court, and I sort of walked out of court quite relieved. I mean, it's quite a knock in a sense that you're sort of accused with things like physical violence, verbal abuse, etc., 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 and you... I mean, I spent the 2 months before the date, doing a huge degree of self-analysis in terms of, is this me? Did I do this? What forms to be physical, verbal abuse? Not physical abuse, verbal, emotional abuse. What is that? To what extent?
Yeah, so you start wondering, maybe I am this monster that
exactly.
They say the protection order says I am.
Exactly. And I mean, to quote the magistrate at the time, and I think she summed it up perfectly, she said there's a difference between bickering and abuse. And and I think that was a great summary for me and a great sort of relinquishment of myself in a sense that couples do argue. Nasty things are said between couples, especially over sort of a 8-9 year relationship.
All right. So what happens from here?
Basically, what happens from here is that the said person, basically my wife, has no legal justification in terms of prohibiting me access to my son. And this is the difficulty for fathers.
Can't you go to court now to get visitation rights?
That's exactly what you're doing. You go to court, you try to get visitation rights.
Is that difficult?
It is incredibly difficult. The problem with the family court is obviously the duration that you need to wait in order to get access to the court. So the court will not grant you urgency based on the fact that your child is an infant, based on the fact that he's growing exponentially, and the fact that you are missing out a substantial portion of his life. The last time I saw my son, he was 6 months old. He's now going on 10 months old. Will he remember his father when he sees his father? So there's no urgency on the basis of the age of the child. So literally you get a court date and you need to then wait until that court date. So there's nothing that prohibits me from seeing my son. There's nothing now that prohibits me from seeing my wife. But I mean, how do you do it? Say, for example, she lives in a complex. What do you climb over a wall of a complex?
Have you tried to contact her? Have you tried to deal with this? Both of you sit down in a room, even if there's a mediator?
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is why I've got this far, in a sense that, you know, that's why I'm here, in a sense, to try and bring relevance to fathers who try to approach this reasonably.
Yeah, but have you made any progress with
there's
sitting down to talk to her?
Well, I mean, you need somebody who's willing to sit down and talk to begin with.
She doesn't want to see you.
Yeah, she doesn't want to see you. She doesn't want to respond to your email. She won't respond to your WhatsApp. She won't respond to your mother's call. She won't respond to your family's calls. And I mean, I think relevant here, I mean, this particular person has known my family since she was 13 years of age. I mean, she literally grew up in my family home. So I think it's been, I mean, it's also quite difficult for your mother. I mean, not to go into mothers, but I mean, a mother's nightmare is to sort of have a son who is accused of physical violence, and you've got to get onto the phone to your mother and try to substantiate the fact that this is not in actual fact you. So I think she was happier than what I was to a degree, the fact that it was actually sort of thrown out of court. But again, you know, you sit at family court, and not to sort of regale women in any way, but you sit in family court and you understand through meeting lawyers there, because that's a lengthy waiting process just to get dates, et cetera, and you get talking to people around. And I mean, it's incredible how many men are actually...
Yeah, I don't know how the law works. I don't understand. Mabali says that in her family there was a relative of hers who's had a similar situation trying to get visitation rights, or at least custody rights of the child. In a situation there, and that she understands, right, Mubs, that the system is changing. It used to always be very much in favor of the mother, for various reasons. The mother and her capacity to be a parent was considered to outweigh the man's need to see the child some of the time.
Yeah, we as a family were all anticipating the worst for the guy, because we all, you know, walked into the situation with the perception that obviously the courts are going to favor the mother, because that's just what they do. And then after phoning around and speaking to several lawyers and just asking for advice, you know, we were assured that, no, listen, that perception is changing, because courts understand that a child is always better off when both parents can be involved and can have the shared custody, as opposed to awarding it to just either one or the other. Obviously, notwithstanding extreme cases where, you know, children are being abused. But again, this guy went through a lot of trauma and a lot of pain, and it did take a long time. But ultimately, the courts did come back and they said, you know, to the woman, you are demanding far too much. That is not in the interest of the children. We are going to award you both shared custody in this situation.
I think it's, I mean, I would agree with you. I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer, but the Child Protection Act, I think, was amended a year or two ago, in a sense that the law now promotes joint access or joint custody between fathers and children, fathers and mothers in regards to their children. The issue is, to a large extent, dependent on the age of the child. So if the child is obviously an infant, the law still, to a degree, swings toward... But yeah. In this country, I mean, in particular in this country, I mean, how many women are the breadwinners in a family setup, and how many fathers are actually the primary caregiver of those child, who are actually raising those children?
Life has changed. And again, I mean, I don't know enough, except from your side here in this one email that you sent me and sitting with you today, to be able to offer any kind of insight here. And I don't think anyone could except you and her. But your life a year ago, you were happily together.
Yeah.
And you were expecting this child.
Yeah.
So much has changed. Is there not some way that do you ever see any kind of reconciliation here, in terms of at least being civil and respectful with each other enough to give your child a sense of both of its parents? Do you think that's impossible?
I mean, I would definitely do whatever it took to give my child as much stability as possible. But in terms of the actual relationship with my wife, I think that sort of really ends when you have automatic weapons in your house on a Saturday at lunchtime. And I think it's important to note again, that the interim protection actually even come into the house. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, sort of, and I'm making insinuations, but you know, again, it speaks to a degree of corruption, really, the fact that two policemen can be convinced by an individual or individuals to come into a person's house out of a court order, not included in a court order.
Yeah.
And literally arrive.
Again, there's court issues that you can take up here if you feel the need. You could sue the Minister of Police for that, for example.
Absolutely.
But this is a very concerning situation. Look, I certainly hope that for fathers who mean well all over South Africa, and you know, thank goodness there are fathers who care about their kids, because we know enough stories of fathers who don't.
Well, country's riddled with it.
Yeah, and kids who grow up without dads because their dads couldn't give a shit. You're trying to give a shit here, and it's difficult for you.
The fathers are in family court. It's been a good sort of standard for me to understand who the good fathers are and who the not good fathers are.
Right.
To meet the good fathers, go to family court, go to the waiting rooms, listen to their stories. And I think it is hugely underestimated with men simply because we, I guess, don't have the support groups, because by the virtue of the fact that we are men, we don't really speak emotionally about mm-hmm. this. But I mean, the emotional toll on a father who literally raised his son for 6 months and having that son removed from you is somehow by society deemed to be of a lesser impact than what it would be to a woman. If the table, for example, were to be reversed in the situation and I had simply removed my son from my wife for a period of 4 months, I would literally be sitting in a jail cell.
I'm sure.
You know what I mean? So, you know, the equality in terms of male and female rights, Mabali, and again to your point, but if that had been reversed with your family member, if the man had behaved in that fashion, he would literally be in prison. I mean, I went to SAPS out of desperation, because what we're talking about basically is, to a degree, an abduction of and a kidnapping of a child from one parent. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to quote the captain. I don't know if he's legally on point. And I said to him, you know, I mean, is there no way that a father can lay an abduction or a kidnapping charge against a woman or a wife? And he said to me straightforwardly, I can't help you in this regard. If she had come in here, there would be a warrant of arrest issued for you, and basically we would have found you and jailed you. And I think this has become the big mission for me.
It makes a mockery of equality.
Absolutely. I mean, women have fought for equality for how many dozens and hundreds of years? And seemingly when it comes down to the equality of children, some women choose inequality again. You know, it seems to be a bit sort of hypocritical in regards to some women. So, you know, equality in everything, but not equality in regards to children.
All right. Well, listen, man, you've got a long road ahead of you. Obviously, I sympathize. I'm most sad for your child, because for the both of you to not be able to resolve these problems, and for the kid to grow up with either one parent that they did know and now they don't know, and their parents in the same room.
Basically.
I mean, this happens in a lot of situations. It's not like yours is unique. And I'm glad that you brought your story in here, because at least for other fathers, they don't have to feel so alone. But maybe those support groups that you're talking about are the things that you need to start.
Well, I mean, I think this is sort of the beginning of my mission. It's become a real personal thing for me. And I never thought that I would feel this sort of serious about this.
Well, maybe. Someone has to do it. Someone has to start it.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of fathers out there feeling depressed, feeling alone, and I'm not even afraid to talk about it. I mean, December was a horror month. Yeah. Was an absolute horror month. And you've got to convince yourself to try and remain sane, I guess, and keep the fight going. Yeah?
Man, it's tough. Jeez. Well, I feel really bad for both of you and for your kid. It's awful. Horrible situation. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Gareth. Thanks for having me in, man.
All right, dude.
Cool, man.
Yeah, it wouldn't help for us to give out names or identify the people in this situation for either of you, actually. I think it could only make things worse. It'll only set fire to the situation in a way that it hasn't been ignited for a little while.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for both of you. There's nothing worse than having... I mean, there's no creature on earth that's more important to you. There's no single aspect of your life that's more important to either of you than your son. I can totally understand that. And for you to be removed from him must be impossibly hard. And for her, the reasons to have removed him from you must be very, very complex. I can't imagine what they would be. But good luck.
Thanks, Gareth. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for coming to tell us your story.
Cheers, man.
Shit.
Yeah. There's so many of these stories happening behind closed doors that we don't even know about, hey?
Cool. Well, I mean, I don't mean cool as in good. I mean, thanks for sharing. Jeez. Well, you know, if I ever had a kid and that happened to me, I don't know what I would do. try to remain sane as number one. Anyway. All right, we got the unnews, and then coming up, our discussion with Ronnie Uptaker. Back in the early 90s, he saw the potential of the internet and ran with it. He started an incredibly successful business, became Dimension Data. Since then, he's been involved in using innovation and hard work to affect change in South Africa, and he's interested in everything from technology to film production. He's a master storyteller and someone who's very much in touch with where the world is going. He's been involved in producing movies with the likes of South Africa's greats, Kagiso Lediga, with Riyad Musa. Incredible guy. So Ronnie Uptaker is our guest after 8 o'clock this morning. We'll give that to you in a second. First things first, let's get into the un-news. You need to know, right, Mubs?
Absolutely.
People have got to know, in the words of Richard Nixon, whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. It turned out to be exactly that. Just like other ex-presidents. All right. It's been revealed that Jacob Zuma had a direct hand in the creation of ANN7. He thought it was essential that the news network reported South African affairs in the way that he wanted. He also wanted mature women to report the stories to make everything look above board. AJ Gupta, on the other hand, said he wanted models, not ugly old bitches. Cyril Ramaphosa will field questions today in Parliament over the new controversial land policies. For this, he will have to switch from being a capitalist to being a socialist, a practice the president will have become well accustomed to as he continues to seek popularity over actual purpose. And finally, Jose Mourinho will be working for Russian TV during the World Cup. In the wake of recent spy poisoning, though, he has had second thoughts. Well, that was until a strange letter arrived in the post yesterday. It contained what looked like small pills, two of them, to which Mourinho said he was thrilled to work with the Russians. Can't wait to get over there. Thank you so much for asking. That's the end of the press conference. Goodbye. Wait and see what happens. Coming up, Ronnie Uptaker, cliffcentral.com. Thank you to CM Mubs, Ben Mabali, and you. Is that it? Did I leave anything out, Sia?
No.
Okay, then we're good to go. All right. Coming up next, Ronnie Uptaker. I just needed to check.
This is CliffCentral.com.